A private investigator, Jack Martin, told the FBI that he knew the people who had murdered JFK, Lee Harvey Oswald, David Ferry, and Guy Bannister. Oswald and David Ferry were both in the Civil Air Patrol and knew each other. Their mutual attendance is corroborated by Civil Air Patrol records, and pilots in the Civil Air Patrol agree that Ferry and Oswald knew each other. Jack Martin worked for Guy Bannister, formerly the FBI special agent in charge of Chicago turned New Orleans private investigator, who had his PI office in the same building that had its address stamped on pro-Castro leaflets that Oswald was handing out. Jim Garrison, the district attorney of New Orleans, was convinced that Oswald, Ferry, and Bannister were conspirators, and added Clay Shaw, a local businessman, to the list, and even arrested Shaw. The circumstantial evidence presented in the trial was intriguing, but not compelling enough to convict any of them, especially with their combined political and financial influence. Jean Natz, an aviatrix, said that in Cleveland, David Ferry, quote, had done more for the Civil Air Patrol than anyone else, and built up the squadron to one of the biggest squadrons in the state of Ohio, end quote. Despite this praise, Ferry's work in the Civil Air Patrol was often spotty or not recorded, and he was terminated multiple times from various positions in the Civil Air Patrol. Ferry became an instructor initially, and later a commander in the Civil Air Patrol, then had three further unremarkable posts with the Civil Air Patrol. Except to say that, despite three unremarkable posts, Ferry was consistently given leadership positions at the Civil Air Patrol. Ferry then was allowed to form his own cadet squadron without Civil Air Patrol accreditation, but was nonetheless allowed to base his group, Falcon Squadron, at Metairie Civil Air Patrol Base at Moisant in 1960. Ed Wiebel testified that he had served with Lee Harvey Oswald under David Ferry in the Civil Air Patrol. Wiebel told the Warren Commission that Oswald had lost interest after he got his uniform a few meetings after joining. The FBI interviewed Joseph Ehrlicher, commander of the Louisiana Wing Civil Air Patrol. Ehrlicher found records showing that Oswald was enrolled as a Civil Air Patrol cadet at Moisant in July 27, 1955. With serial number 084965, with no termination date of his enrollment. Ehrlicher further documented that, although Ferry's first period as squadron commander was terminated 6 months earlier at Moisant Airport, that Ferry had continued working throughout 1955 at Moisant, a Civil Air Patrol base, without an official connection with the Civil Air Patrol. Ferry was officially reconnected with the Civil Air Patrol in late 1958 until 1961, when he was again terminated. After that, Ferry set up another unofficial flight squadron that was described as one, quote, with no connection with or recognition by the Civil Air Patrol, end quote. Two names for this squadron may have been the Omnipotence or the IMSU, the Internal Mobile Security Unit. Guy Bannister and David Ferry testified that such a group never formed. The FBI, however, interviewed Mrs. Barrett, who told an FBI investigator that her 14-year-old son had been influenced to join an organization called Omnipotent by a young adult who insisted on complete allegiance to him. The organization itself was run by a Dr. Ferry. The Civil Air Patrol was largely influenced by Harold Byrd. Harold Byrd was commander of the Texas Wing of the Civil Air Patrol from 1941 to 1948. In 1949, Byrd became the vice chairman of the National Civil Air Patrol Board and later rose to chairman. An industrialist, this chairman of the Civil Air Patrol, purchased a $400,000 building in Dallas for less than 10% of its value, $35,000. After his own company had defaulted on its loan. The building, located at 411 Elm Street, became known as the Texas School Book Depository. Another Oswald is the Lee who was fluent in Russian. According to an article in The Nation in February 1948, quote, The National Civil Air Patrol admits that some sort of plan using the Civil Air Patrol for espionage work is now in the tentative stage and is awaiting the approval of U.S. Central Intelligence and FBI. The plan released by the Pennsylvania wing indicated the organization was getting set to send selected Civil Air Patrol recruits to the Army Counterintelligence School at Holabird Signal Depot, Baltimore, Maryland. It declared that these recruits would be taught the Russian language, Russian military tactics, Russian politics, and all characteristics of the Russian people. Oswald received his tourist visa to the Soviet Union in under 24 hours following his application. A rapid turnaround. Lee, after arriving in the USSR and telling Richard Snyder, the U.S. senior consular official in Moscow, that he wanted to renounce his American citizenship since he was a Marxist and intended to share U.S. radar secrets he had learned during his time as a radar operator in the Marines with the Russians, was not questioned or charged with treason. Instead, Snyder, who incidentally worked for the CIA and the State Department before becoming the U.S. senior consular official in Moscow, convinced Oswald to hold off on renouncing his American citizenship. Oswald waited for a year and a half before seeing Snyder again, working in a radio factory in Minsk for a bizarrely inflated salary paid for by the Soviet secret police. A couple years later, Lee asked Snyder for his passport back. Snyder returned it from his desk drawer, and Lee later returned to the U.S. with his wife Marina in June 1962. None of his strange trip explains Oswald's skill in the Russian language before and after traveling to the USSR, and his apparently poor Russian while living in the USSR. Frank Cutlady, Oswald's vice principal from high school, said Oswald's transcripts reflected poor grades. Oswald is often talked about as being dull-witted, and a guard at the Soviet embassy in Mexico City remembers Oswald speaking in, quote, broken Russian, end quote. When Lee phoned Valery Kostikov at the embassy to ask if there was, quote, anything new concerning the telegram in Washington, end quote. The telegram and its significance is unknown, although the CIA memo states that Kostikov was, quote, an identified KGB officer, end quote, who served in Department 13, a unit, quote, responsible for sabotage and assassination, end quote. Lee's broken Russian only occurred after Oswald was granted political asylum and was living full-time in Minsk. In Minsk, Lee was taught Russian by Stanislaw Shushkovich, who became, later, the first Belarusian president. And Lee's Russian was apparently so poor that locals laughed at Oswald whenever he tried talking to them. Shushkovich said that Oswald knew, quote, a few words, so it was impossible to discuss anything abstract, end quote. Shushkovich said that Oswald never spoke. According to Galina Makovskaya, one of Lee's co-workers, Oswald, quote, rarely spoke. He almost never spoke, end quote. Everyone who knew Lee from Minsk had a similar impression of his facility with the Russian language, that his Russian was so bad it was laughable. This period of broken Russian, however, was the exception in Lee's life, not the rule. Before and after the 2.5 years of his incomprehensible Russian in Minsk, Oswald spoke, read, and listened to Russian so frequently and so well his whole life that friends, acquaintances, and fellow Marine Corps members testified to his fluency in Russian. With his tourist visa running out, Oswald was initially denied political asylum to the Soviet Union and subsequently attempted suicide. A Russian psychologist thought it was a scheme to garner sympathy, and if that's true, it worked. After he cut his wrists, Oswald was granted political asylum and sent to live in Minsk. The doctors who examined him after his attempt, however, realized that when they asked Oswald questions in Russian, quote, the patient apparently understands the question asked in Russian. Sometimes he answers correctly, but immediately states that he does not understand what he was asked. End quote. Peter Gregory, a native Russian, wrote a letter of recommendation for Oswald for work as a professional translator. Gregory further believed that Oswald spoke Russian with a Polish accent, which he would not have picked up in Minsk. Gregory, a linguist, said, quote, "He would speak so well that a native Russian would not be sure whether he was born in that country or not," end quote. Paul Gregory, son of Peter, was a classmate of Lee Harvey Oswald's in high school, and testified to the Warren Commission that Lee was, quote, "completely fluent. He understood more than I did, and he could express any idea that he wanted to in Russian," end quote. Schoolmates said that Oswald spoke Russian when he was in his teens. There is no evidence of Oswald studying Russian in school, or having a Russian tutor, or a relative to teach him. After high school, Oswald joined the Marines and became friends with Zach Stout, who worked with Oswald every day. Stout said, quote, "Oswald didn't attend any Russian classes or read any Russian books or listen to any Russian records. He didn't have anywhere to get such materials, and if he had them, we would have known about it. We slept in the same bunkhouse, and most of the time worked on the same radar crew. The idea that Oswald studied Russian in Japan is ridiculous. It just didn't happen," end quote. Oswald was stationed in Japan until November 1958. 1 month later, Oswald reported for duty in California in December 1958. He immediately took a Russian fluency test, passed it, and was seen by multiple bunkmates and friends reading Russian newspapers and listening to Russian records. A few months after that, in the spring of 1959, Oswald went on a date and conversed with Rosalie Quinn for 2 hours in Russian. Irwin Lewis, a Marine serving with Oswald, said, quote, "It was a matter of common knowledge among squadron members that he could read, write, and speak Russian," end quote. James Botello said, quote, "Oswald subscribed to a newspaper printed in Russian," end quote. And Mac Osborne said, quote, "He spent a great deal of his free time reading papers printed in Russian. I believe he also had some books written in Russian," end quote. Then Oswald went to the Soviet Union and completely lost his ability to speak Russian for 2 years, and never mentioned his previous ability to speak Russian to anybody. Then, Oswald returned to the USA, and his facility in Russian returned with him. Miss Natalie Ray, a native Russian living in the United States, talked with Oswald at a party in Dallas upon his return to the USA. Natalie said that she couldn't believe he had acquired his Russian fluency in the 2.5 years he was in Russia. Quote, "He speak just perfect Russian. Just perfect. Really surprised me. It's just too good speaking Russia for be such a short time," end quote. Oswald's friend, George de Morenschild, born in Russia and having connections with the CIA via George W. Bush and J. Walton Moore, and French intelligence, and knowing Jackie Kennedy's family, testified that Oswald, quote, "preferred to speak Russian than English any time. He always would switch from English to Russian. Russian is a complex language, and he was supposed to have stayed in the Soviet Union only a little over 2 years. He must have had some previous training, and that point had never been brought up by the Warren Commission," end quote. Oswald told a friend in the Soviet Union that he had never read the Communist Manifesto before, but that it seemed interesting. Palmer McBride, a friend from before Lee left for the USSR, testified that Lee had shown Palmer his copies of the Communist Manifesto, and the work it was translated from, the Russian language, Das Kapital. Morenschild recalls that Oswald often read Tolstoy and Dostoevsky. There is a Lee who, despite taking lessons, could not put together a Russian sentence, but only took those lessons and could not speak Russian while in the Soviet Union. Then there's the Lee who could speak Russian fluently ever since he was a teenager, according to his schoolmates through high school, the Lee who could speak, listen to, and read Russian in the Marines, the Lee who passed a Russian fluency test, and the Lee who spoke Russian very well according to those who knew him after he returned from the Soviet Union. The same Russian-speaking, Minsk-living Lee joined and was never recorded leaving the Civil Air Patrol, an organization that publicly stated it was planning to conduct espionage against Russia specifically. Lee served under David Ferry, named as a JFK assassination conspirator, in the Civil Air Patrol. The Civil Air Patrol, founded by the far-right D.H. Byrd, who owned the building JFK was shot from. Byrd was friends and partners with intelligence operative George Morenschild, a mutual friend of Lee Harvey Oswald. Lee Harvey Oswald was then murdered by a mafia-connected FBI recruit, Jack Ruby, seen for years associating with Oswald before Lee would have been allowed to take part in a trial that had a very low projected chance of conviction. Hoover and Johnson told the Warren commissioners that they needed to find Oswald responsible and to have acted alone, despite having in-hand audio and visual recordings of other people using Oswald's name and identity. But hey, that's a lone nut for you, right?